upstairs, she called for a knife to cut the twine and then took her time unwrapping the coarse paper. Underneath was a layer of canvas sacking stitched up with heavy fisherman's thread. Sewn to the sacking by its corners was an envelope bearing my name. Auntie cut the envelope free and then tore away the sacking to reveal a dark wooden box. When Auntie took off the lid, I felt myself all at once growing heavy, for there, nestled amid folds of white linen, lay the tiny mortuary tablets that had once stood before the altar in our tipsy house. Two of them, which I had never seen before, looked newer than the others. For the moment, Auntie left the box there on the floor with the tablets lined up so neatly inside, and took the letter from the envelope and read it out loud. Dear Chio, 6 weeks after you left for your new life in Kyoto, the suffering of your honored mother came to its end, and only a few weeks afterward your honored father departed this world as well. This humble person is deeply sorry for your loss and hopes you will rest assured that the remains of both your honored parents are enshrined in the village cemetery. The training of an apprentice geisha is an arduous path. However, this humble person is filled with admiration for those who are able to recast their suffering and become great artists. It gives me some measure of satisfaction to know that a safe place in this world has been found for you, Chio, and that you will not be forced to suffer through years of uncertainty. Your sister Satsu came through Yoroido late this past fall, but ran away again at once with the son of Mr. Sugi. Mr. Sugi fervently hopes to see his beloved son again in this lifetime and asks therefore that you please notify him immediately if you receive word from your sister. Most sincerely yours, Tanaka Ichiro. Long before Auntie had finished reading this letter, the tears had begun to flow out of me just like water from a pot that boils over. You must think me very naive for having kept alive the hope for so many months that my mother might still be living, but I really had so few things to hope for, I suppose I would have clutched at anything. Auntie was very kind to me while I tried to find my bearings. Again and again she said to me, "Bear up, Chio. Bear up. There's nothing more any of us can do in this world." During the rest of the spring and all that summer following the letter, I felt like a child lost on a lake in the fog. The days spilled one after another into a muddle. Then, in early spring, a full year after the terrible news about my family, something happened. I was almost 12 by then and was beginning to look a bit womanly, even though Pumpkin still looked very much like a little girl. In any case, very early one morning that April, I awoke from a most peculiar dream about a bearded man. He was standing before me saying something I can't remember, and then all at once he slid open the paper screen over a window beside him with a loud clack. I awoke thinking I'd heard a noise in the room. I couldn't possibly have explained what this meant, but I continued thinking about it while I swept the stepping stones in the courtyard that morning. And I knew with as much certainty as I had ever known anything that sometime during that day I would receive a sign about my future. I had no time for another thought before Auntie called out to me, "Chio, come here." I walked up the dirt corridor as though I were in a trance. She held out two hair ornaments on a square of white silk. "Take these," she said to me. "Hatsumomo came back to the Okiya wearing another girl's ornaments. She must have drunk more than her usual amount of sake. Go find her at the school, ask whose they are, and return them." When I took the ornaments, Auntie gave me a piece of paper with a number of other errands written on it as well, and told me to run them and come back to the Okiya as soon as I could. When I reached the school, I waited outside the building until I heard the dong of the bell signaling the end of classes. Hatsumomo spotted me even before I spotted her and came toward me with another geisha. "Auntie has sent me here, ma'am," I said, "to find out whose hair ornaments you stole last night." Hatsumomo snatched the little bundle from my hand and opened it. "Why, these aren't mine," she said. "Where did you get them?" "Oh, Hatsumomo-san," said the other geisha. "Don't you remember? You and Kanako took out your hair ornaments while the two of you were playing that foolish game with Judge Uwazumi. Kanako must have gone home with your hair ornaments, and you went home with hers." "How disgusting," said Hatsumomo. "When do you think Kanako last washed her hair? Anyway, her oki is right next to yours. Take them for me, would you? Tell her I'll come to fetch mine later, and she'd better not try to keep them." The other geisha took the hair ornaments and left. "Oh, don't go, little Chiyo," Hatsumomo said to me. "There's something I want to show you. It's that young girl over there, the one walking through the gate. Her name is Ichikimi." "I don't know her," I said. "No, of course not. She's nothing special, a bit stupid and as awkward as a cripple. But I just thought you'd find it interesting that she's going to be a geisha, and you never will." I don't think Hatsumomo could have found anything crueler to say to me. For a year and a half now, I'd been condemned to the drudgery of a maid. I felt my life stretching out before me like a long path leading nowhere. I won't say I wanted to become a geisha, but I certainly didn't want to remain a maid. I left and walked down to Shijō Avenue and turned toward the Kamo River. Giant banners on the Minamiza Theater announced the performance of a kabuki play that afternoon. Crowds streamed up the steps into the theater. Among the men in their dark Western-style suits or kimono, several geisha stood out in brilliant coloring. I saw life in all its noisy excitement passing me by. I hurried away from the avenue down a side street leading along the Shirakawa stream, but even there, men and geisha were rushing along in their lives so full of purpose. I threw myself onto the little stone wall at the edge of the stream and wept. I was an abandoned island in the midst of the ocean, with no past, to be sure, but no future either. Soon I felt myself coming to a point where I thought no human voice could reach me, until I heard a man's voice say this, "Why, it's too pretty a day to be so unhappy." Ordinarily, a man on the streets of Gion wouldn't notice a girl like me, particularly while I was making a fool of myself by crying. Yet not only had this man bothered to speak to me, he'd actually spoken kindly. The man who'd addressed me there on the street had a broad, calm face. He was probably about 45 years old, with gray hair combed straight back from his forehead. But I couldn't look at him for long. He seemed so elegant to me that I blushed and looked away. Two younger men stood to one side of him. A geisha stood to the other. I heard the geisha say to him quietly, "Why, she's only a maid. Probably she stubbed her toe while running an errand. I'm sure someone will come along to help her soon."
"I wish I had your faith in people, Izuko-san," said the man.
"The show will be starting in only a moment. Really, chairman, I don't think you should waste any more time."
The chairman turned to the two younger men and asked that they take Izuko ahead to the theater. They bowed and went on their way while the chairman remained behind. He looked at me a long while, though I didn't dare look back at him.
"Stand up a moment," he told me.
I didn't dare disobey him, though I had no idea what he wanted. As it turned out, all he did was take a handkerchief from his pocket to wipe away the grit that had stuck to my face from the top of the stone wall. When he had wiped away the grit, he tipped my head up.
"Here you are, a beautiful girl with nothing on earth to be ashamed of," he said, "and yet you're afraid to look at me. Someone has been cruel to you, or perhaps life has been cruel."
"I don't know, sir," I said, though of course I knew perfectly well.
In a moment he reached into his pocket and brought something out.
"I passed a vendor a moment ago, selling shaved ice with syrup on it.
I never tasted one until I was an adult, but I'd have liked them as a child. Take this coin and buy one. Take my handkerchief, too, so you can wipe your face afterward, he said.
And with this, he pressed the coin into the center of the handkerchief, wrapped it cheerfully into a bundle, and held it out to me. From the moment the chairman had first spoken to me, I'd forgotten that I was watching for a sign about my future. I knew I'd come upon it at last. I took the bundle and bowed low to thank him. In that brief encounter with the chairman, I changed from a lost girl facing a lifetime of emptiness to a girl with purpose in her life. Several months passed, and then one morning I came upon a smell in the entryway so horrible that I dropped the armload of robes I was carrying. The smell was coming from Granny's room. I ran upstairs to fetch Auntie because I knew at once that something must be terribly wrong. Auntie hobbled down the stairs as quickly as she could and went in to find Granny dead on the floor. For a week or two after her death, we were as busy as you can imagine, not only with cleaning the house thoroughly, but with preparing the house by setting out candles, trays with meal offerings, lanterns at the entrance, tea stands, trays for money that visitors brought, and so on. My job during this busy period was to show visitors into the reception room where Mother and Auntie were waiting for them. On about the second or third afternoon, the door rolled open, and in came a kimono that at once struck me as the loveliest I'd seen any of our visitors wear. It was somber because of the occasion, a simple black robe bearing a crest, but its pattern of green and gold grasses sweeping around the hem was so rich-looking. The geisha who wore it wasn't as striking a woman as Hatsumomo, but her features were so perfectly formed that at once I began to feel even more insignificant than usual. And then suddenly I realized who she was. Mameha, the geisha whose kimono Hatsumomo had made me ruin. I lowered my head to keep my face hidden while I showed her and her maid into the reception room. 20 minutes later, when they were ready to leave, she said, "What is your name, little girl?" I told her that my name was Chio. "What unusual eyes," she said. "What color would you call them, Tatsumi?" Her maid took a look at me. "Blue-gray, ma'am," she replied. "That's just what I would have said. Now how many girls in Gion do you think have eyes like that?" I didn't know if Mameha was speaking to me or Tatsumi, but neither of us answered. And then, to my great relief, she excused herself and left. Toward the end of the first month after Granny's death, one of our maids came to me one day to say I had a visitor at the door. I rushed down to find the maid who had accompanied Mameha to our okia a few weeks earlier. "Are you sent on errands from time to time, Chio?" she asked me. I had no idea why she was asking, but I told her that I was. "Good," she said. "Arrange for yourself to be sent out tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock and meet me at the little bridge that arches over the Shirakawa stream." I certainly wasn't pleased that Mameha's maid wanted me to accompany her somewhere, probably to Mameha, I thought, to be scolded for what I'd done. But just the same, the following day, I talked Pumpkin into sending me on an errand that didn't really need to be run. I left the okia and walked along the Shirakawa stream to the arched bridge leading into the Motoyoshicho section of Gion. Finally, Mameha's maid came, and just as I'd feared, she led me over the bridge and along the stream to the very same doorway where Hatsumomo and Korin had handed me the kimono and sent me up the stairs.
"Chio is here, ma'am,"
the maid cried. Then I heard Mameha call from the back room, "All right. Thank you, Tatsumi." At last, Mameha came out from the back room. She arranged herself on her knees opposite me.
"So, Chio, isn't it? Tell me something. When I came to your okia to pay my respects, I saw another girl your age. That must have been Pumpkin. How do she and Hatsumomo get along? Well, ma'am, I said, I suppose Hatsumomo pays her no more attention than she would a leaf that has fluttered into the courtyard.
Is that the way Hatsumomo treats you as well?
I opened my mouth to speak, but the truth is, I wasn't sure what to say.
You needn't answer. I know perfectly well how Hatsumomo treats you. She and I have known one another since I was a girl of 6 and she was 9. When you've watched a creature misbehaving itself over such a long period, there's no secret in knowing what it will do next.
I don't know what I did to make her hate me so, I said.
She can't bear to have rivals, Mameha went on. That's the reason she treats you as she does.
Surely Hatsumomo doesn't see me as a rival, ma'am, I said. I'm no more a rival to her than a puddle is a rival to the ocean.
Not in the tea houses of Gion, perhaps, but within your okiya. Don't you find it odd that Mrs. Nitta has never adopted Hatsumomo as her daughter? I'm sure she knows perfectly well what sort of adopted daughter Hatsumomo would turn out to be. The sort that finds a way to drive the mother out. The pumpkin girl. I don't imagine Hatsumomo feels too worried about Mrs. Nitta adopting her.
Mameha-san, I said, I'm sure you recall the kimono of yours that was ruined.
You're going to tell me you're the girl who put ink on it.
Well, yes, ma'am. And even though I'm sure you know Hatsumomo was behind it, I do hope that someday I'll be able to show you how sorry I am for what happened.
Mameha gazed at me a long while. I had no notion of what she was thinking until she said, I want to know why you're no longer training to be a geisha. Your teachers at the school tell me you were doing well right up until the moment you stopped taking lessons. I told her about my debts, including the kimono. There's something more you're not telling me. You tried to run away, didn't you?
Yes, ma'am, I said. I had a sister. We'd been separated, but we managed to find each other.
I explained to her why I'd done it.
I know it was foolish of me, I said afterward. Now Mother won't invest another sen in my training since she's afraid I may run away again. I'd give anything to undo my mistakes.
Nothing will change until Mrs. Nitta lets you resume your training, Mameha told me.
I don't have much hope, I said, of ever persuading her.
It isn't my intention to have you speak with Mrs. Nitta yourself, she said. She'll turn you down in an instant. As far as she knows, there's no one in Gion willing to be your older sister.
I was very sorry to hear her say this. In that case, Mameha-san, what should I do?
You should go back to your okiya, Chiyo, she said, and mention to no one that you've spoken with me. After this, she gave me a look that meant I should bow and excuse myself right then, which I did. I should explain just what Mameha meant by older sister, even though at the time I hardly knew much about it myself. By the time a girl is finally ready to make her debut as an apprentice, she needs to have established a relationship with a more experienced geisha. When two girls are bound together as sisters, they perform a ceremony like a wedding, and afterward, they see each other almost as members of the same family, calling each other older sister and younger sister, just as real family members do. Some geisha may not take the role as seriously as they should, but an older sister who does her job properly becomes the most important figure in a young geisha's life. She must make sure younger sister attracts the notice of people she'll need to know. Late one morning, a few weeks after my encounter with Mameha, I was serving tea to Mother and a guest in the reception room when Auntie slid open the door.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Auntie said. We have a visitor at the door, Mameha.
The room was perfectly quiet for a long moment, and then Mother's guest said,
Mameha-san, well, I'll run along, but only if you promise to tell me tomorrow just what this is all about.
While Mother was answering the door, I stood in the maid's room cleaning out the ashtray, and I worked so hard to overhear Mameha and Mother that it wouldn't have surprised me if I had strained all the muscles in my ears. Mameha said, Mrs. Nitta, I do hope you'll forgive me for disturbing you on such a busy day, but I'd like to talk with you briefly about your maid, Chio.
Our Chio can be a bit of a nuisance, Mother said. I do hope she hasn't been troubling you.
No, nothing like that, Mameha said. But I noticed she hasn't been attending the school these past few weeks. She's really quite a lovely girl. I must say at times I've thought of coming to ask you permission to make her my younger sister. But now that she's no longer in training... I heard nothing more of their conversation, for at this point Auntie ran out of patience for my eavesdropping and sent me out of the Okia with a list of errands. When I returned to the Okia, Pumpkin was kneeling on the walkway near the courtyard. "Find some excuse to go into Mother's room," she said. "She's been in there all afternoon with her abacus. I'm sure she'll say something to you."
I thought this was a fine idea.
As it turned out, Mother was listening to a comedy show on the radio. To my surprise, she turned off the radio the moment she saw me.
"Now, Chio, you've been here in the Okia more than a year," she said.
"More than 2 years, ma'am."
"In that time, I've hardly taken any notice of you. And then today along comes a geisha like Mameha to say she wants to be your older sister? How on earth am I to understand this?"
Before I could speak, the door to Mother's room slid open, and I heard Hatsumomo's voice say,
"I'm sorry, Mother. I didn't know you were busy scolding the maid."
"She won't be a maid much longer," Mother told her. "We've had a visit today that may interest you."
"Yes, I gather Mameha has come and plucked our little Mino out of the aquarium."
"For some reason," Mother said, "Mameha seems to think Chio will repay her debts by the age of 20.
"Perhaps, Mother, if you sold her to a whorehouse..."
"Stop it, Hatsumomo. I didn't invite you in here to listen to this sort of thing. I want to know what you've done to Mameha lately to provoke her."
"I may have ruined Miss Prissy's day by strolling past her on the street, perhaps, but other than that I haven't done a thing."
"Perhaps," Mother said, "she really does think Chio will be a more successful geisha than our Pumpkin, and would like to make a bit of money off her. Who can blame her for that?"
"Really, Mother, Mameha doesn't need Chio in order to make money. Mameha would probably establish a relationship with your little dog if she thought it would help drive me out of Gion," Hatsumomo said.
"Come now. Why would she want to drive you out of Gion?"
"Because I'm more beautiful," Hatsumomo said. "Does she need a better reason?"
In the 2 years since Mother had put an end to my lessons, I'd forgotten much of what I'd learned. And I hadn't learned much to begin with, since my mind had been occupied with other things. This is why when I went back to the school after Mameha agreed to be my older sister, I honestly felt I was beginning my lessons for the very first time. In the beginning, Pumpkin and I practiced shamisen together every afternoon right after our hour-long lesson in reading and writing with Auntie. Then one afternoon while Pumpkin was helping me with a technique for slurring notes together, Hatsumomo appeared in the corridor before us. We hadn't even heard her come into the Okia.
"Why, look, it's Mameha's little sister-to-be," she said to me. "I might have called you little Miss Stupid, but after what I've just observed, I think I ought to save that for Pumpkin instead."
"Have I done something wrong?" she asked.
"Nothing at all," Hatsumomo said. "I just didn't realize what a thoughtful person you are."
"I'm sorry, Hatsumomo," Pumpkin said. "I was trying to help Chio, but
Chio doesn't want your help. When she wants help with her shamisen, she'll go to her teacher."
And here Hatsumomo pinched Pumpkin by the lip so hard that the shamisen slid off her lap.
"You and I need to have a little talk," Hatsumomo said to her. "You'll put your shamisen away, and I'll stand here to make sure you don't do anything else stupid."
When Hatsumomo let go, poor Pumpkin stepped down to pick up her shamisen and begin disassembling it.
"You'll have to find yourself another little friend," she said to me.
After Pumpkin and I have had our talk, she'll know better than to speak a word to you in the future. Won't you, Pumpkin?
Pumpkin nodded, for she had no choice, but I could see how sorry she felt. We never practiced shamisen together again.
I reported this encounter to Mameha the next time she summoned me to her apartment.
I hope you took to heart what Hatsumomo said to you, she told me. If Pumpkin isn't to speak a word to you, then you mustn't speak a word to her either. You may have trusted the poor girl in the past, but you mustn't any longer.
I felt so sad at hearing this, I could hardly speak for a long while. Trying to survive in an okia with Hatsumomo, I said at last, is like a pig trying to survive in a slaughterhouse.
You're quite right, Mameha said. Your only defense is to become more successful than Hatsumomo and drive her out.
But everyone says she's one of the most popular geisha. I can't imagine how I'll ever become more popular than she is.
I didn't say popular, Mameha replied. I said successful.
I mean a geisha who has earned her independence. I'm more successful than Hatsumomo. I have a wealthy danna, and she doesn't.
I'd already been in Gion long enough to know something of what Mameha meant by a danna. It's the term a wife uses for her husband, or rather, it was in my day.
But a geisha who refers to her danna isn't talking about her husband. Geisha never marry, or at least those who do no longer continue as geisha. You see, sometimes after a party with a geisha, certain men don't feel satisfied with all the flirting and begin to long for something a bit more. A geisha of the first or second tier in Gion can't be bought for a single night, not by anyone. But if the right sort of man is interested in something else, not a night together but a much longer time, and if he's willing to offer suitable terms, well, in that case, a geisha will be happy to accept such an arrangement. Parties and so on are all very nice, but the real money in Gion comes from having a danna. A geisha without one, such as Hatsumomo, is like a stray cat on the street without a master to feed it. Mameha was kind enough to sit me down and explain much of this on that day in her apartment, and when she was satisfied that I understood her, she said, "Following your debut, you'll be an apprentice geisha until the age of 18. After that, you'll need a danna if you're going to pay back your debts. And if you pay them back by the age of 20, Mother will owe me a good deal of money. I made a sort of bet with her the other day." Her words made me think about the chairman and how my life would be so much better if I could rely on a man like him. During the spring of 1934, after I'd been in training for more than 2 years, Hatsumomo and Mother decided that the time had come for Pumpkin to make her debut as an apprentice geisha. I found out about it only when Pumpkin left the okia early one afternoon and came back at the end of the day wearing the hairstyle of a young geisha, the so-called momoware, meaning split peach. When I took my first look at her as she stepped up into the entrance hall, I felt sick with disappointment and jealousy. I told Mameha that afternoon about Pumpkin's debut, and for months afterward I hoped she would say the time had come for my apprenticeship to begin as well. Instead, spring passed and summer too without her saying anything of the sort. In contrast with the exciting life Pumpkin was now leading, I had only my lessons and my chores, as well as the 15 or 20 minutes Mameha spent with me during the afternoon several times a week. One sunny October afternoon, Mameha said, "I've been speaking with Waza-san." This was the name of her fortune teller. "And he suggested the 3rd day in November as a suitable time for your debut." She stopped to watch me as I stood there, still as a tree. I didn't cry out or clap my hands, but I was so delighted I couldn't speak. Finally, I bowed to Mameha and thanked her. "You're going to make a fine geisha," she said. Finally, the day came when Mameha and I were to perform the ceremony binding us as sisters. I bathed early and spent the rest of the morning dressing. Auntie helped me with the finishing touches on my makeup and hair. She accompanied me to Mameha's apartment, where I expressed my gratitude to Mameha and pledged to honor and respect her. The ceremony, which was attended by the mistress of the Ichiriki, lasted only about 10 minutes. A maid brought a tray with several sake cups, and Mameha and I drank together. I took 3 sips from a cup, and then passed it to her, and she took 3 sips. We did this with 3 different cups, and then it was over. From that moment on, I was no longer known as Chiyo. I was the novice geisha, Sayuri. One afternoon, as Mameha and I were strolling across the Shijo Avenue, she came to a stop suddenly. "What is it, Mameha-san?" I asked. "I may as well tell you, because you'll only hear it from someone else," she said. "Your little friend Pumpkin has just won the Apprentices Award. It's expected she'll win it a second time as well." Mameha was referring to an award for the apprentice who'd earned the most during the previous month. "Oh, now really," said Mameha, "don't look so sad. You ought to be rejoicing." "Yes, it's very selfish of me," I said. "That isn't what I mean. Hatsumomo and Pumpkin will both pay dearly for this apprentice's award. In 5 years, no one will remember who Pumpkin is. Come, I'll explain." Mameha led me to the tea room in the Pontocho district and sat me down. "Here's how a geisha like Hatsumomo could make her younger sister seem more successful than she really was. To begin with, a popular geisha in Gion is welcome at nearly any party, and will drop in on many of them for only 5 minutes. Her customers will be happy to pay the fees, even though she's only saying hello. They know that the next time they visit Gion, she'll probably join them at the table for a while to give them the pleasure of her company. An apprentice, on the other hand, can't possibly get away with such behavior. Her role is to build relationships. Until she becomes a full-fledged geisha at the age of 18, she doesn't consider flitting from party to party. Instead, she stays for an hour or more, and only then telephones her okiya to ask her older sister's whereabouts, so she can go to another tea house and be introduced to a new round of guests. While her popular older sister might drop in on as many as 20 parties during an evening, an apprentice probably attends no more than 5. But this isn't what Hatsumomo was doing. She was taking Pumpkin with her everywhere she went. "Hatsumomo's behavior only shows us how desperate she is," Mameha concluded. "She'll do anything to make Pumpkin look good. And you know why, don't you?" "I'm not sure, Mameha-san." "She wants Pumpkin to look good so Mrs. Nitta will adopt her. If Pumpkin is made the daughter of the Okiya, her future is assured, and so is Hatsumomo's. After all, Hatsumomo is Pumpkin's sister. Mrs. Nitta certainly wouldn't throw her out. Do you understand what I'm saying? If Pumpkin is adopted, you'll never be free of Hatsumomo, unless it's you who is thrown out." I felt as the waves of the ocean must feel when clouds have blocked the warmth of the sun. "Well, I will tell you one thing," Mameha said, leaning forward a bit from what I took as excitement. "You and I will be going to an engagement together in the next 2 weeks." "May I ask where?" I asked. "Just be prepared," she said. On Sunday around noon, I heard the door of the okiya roll open and put my shamisen down onto the walkway where I'd been practicing an hour or so to rush to the front. I expected to see one of Mameha's maids, but it was only a man from the druggist's making a delivery of Chinese herbs for Auntie's arthritis. After one of our elderly maids took the packet, I was about to return to my shamisen when I noticed the delivery man trying to get my attention. He was holding a piece of paper in one hand so that only I could see it. It was a note, unsigned, in Mameha's hand. "Ask Auntie's permission to leave. Tell her I have work for you to do in my apartment, and come here no later than 1 o'clock.
Mameha was still attending a morning engagement when I arrived at her apartment, but her maid showed me into the dressing room to help me with my makeup, and afterward brought in the kimono ensemble Mameha had set out for me. The kimono she'd laid out for me was a gray silk with a silver waterfall pouring from the knee into a slate blue ocean. As if it wasn't amazing enough that Mameha had arranged for me to look so beautiful, when she returned to her apartment, she changed her clothes and put on a fairly plain kimono. From the Gion Shrine, we rode north in a rickshaw for a half hour into a section of Kyoto I'd never seen. Along the way, Mameha told me we would be attending a sumo exhibition as the guests of Iwamura Ken, the founder of Iwamura Electric in Osaka, and his right-hand man, Nobu Toshikazu, who was president of the company. Nobu was quite a fan of sumo and had helped organize the exhibition that afternoon. "I should tell you," she said to me, "that the Nobu is a bit peculiar looking. You'll make a great impression on him by behaving well when you meet him. In time you'll come to see what a good man he is." At last, we climbed out of the rickshaw at the campus of Kyoto University. At the exhibition hall, Mameha led me down to a tier in the front where we removed our shoes and began to walk across in our split-toed socks on a little margin of wood. Our hosts were in this row, but I had no idea who they were until I caught sight of a man waving his hand to Mameha. I knew at once that he was Nobu. There was no doubt why Mameha had warned me about his appearance. Even from a distance, the skin of his face looked like a melted candle. As I walked along behind Mameha, I focused my attention not on Nobu, but on a very elegant man seated beside him on the same tatami mat, wearing a pinstriped men's kimono. From the moment I set my eyes on this man, I felt a strange stillness settling over me. He was talking with someone in another box, so that I could only see the back of his head, but he was so familiar to me that for a moment I could make no sense of what I saw. Then he turned his head, and for the first time I saw his broad face and the sharpness of his cheekbones, and most of all, his eyelids folded so tightly in the corners and so smooth and flat. It was the chairman. I had seen him during only one brief moment in my life, but I'd spent a great many moments since then imagining him. He was like a song I'd heard once in fragments, but had been singing in my mind ever since. While Mameha was greeting the two men, I stood behind waiting my turn to bow. I saw the chairman was looking at me with what I took to be curiosity. "Chairman Iwamura? President Nobu?" Mameha said. "This is my new younger sister, Sayuri." "I'm certain you've heard of the famous Iwamura Ken, founder of Iwamura Electric, and probably you've heard of Nobu Toshikazu as well. Certainly no business partnership in Japan was ever more famous than theirs." Even as a 14-year-old girl, I'd heard of them, but I'd never imagined for a moment that Iwamura Ken might be the man I'd met on the banks of the Shirakawa stream. "That certainly is a beautiful kimono your younger sister is wearing, Mameha," the chairman said. "Do I recall seeing it on you back during your days as an apprentice?" "It's possible, I suppose," Mameha replied. "But the chairman has seen me in so many different kimono over the years, I can't imagine he remembers them all." "Well, I'm no different from any other man. Beauty makes quite an impression on me. When it comes to these sumo wrestlers, I can't tell one of them from the other." Mameha leaned across in front of the chairman and whispered to me, "What the chairman is really saying is that he doesn't particularly like sumo." "Now, Mameha, if you're trying to get me into trouble with Nobu..." "Chairman, Nobu-san has known for years how you feel." "Nevertheless," he said. "Sayuri, is this your first encounter with sumo?"
"It is. And I would be very grateful for anything the chairman might be kind enough to explain to me as we watch it."
"If you want to know what's going on," said Nobu,
You'd better talk to me. What is your name, apprentice? I couldn't hear well with the noise of the crowd.
My name is Sayuri, sir, I said.
I believe she may be even prettier than you, Mameha.
Nobu-san, no woman likes to hear that she isn't the prettiest creature around.
During the bouts that followed, I often felt that one ear was linked to my mind and the other to my heart, because on one side I listened to what Nobu told me, and much of it was interesting. But the sound of the chairman's voice on the other side, as he talked with Mameha, always distracted me. An hour or more passed, and then the movement of a brilliant color caught my eye. It was an orange silk flower swaying in a woman's hair as she took her place on her knees. It was Hatsumomo. To see her there when I hadn't expected her, I felt a jolt as if I'd stepped on an electric wire. Surely it was only a matter of time before she found a way of humiliating me. When I looked at Mameha, she flicked her eyes toward Hatsumomo. At that moment, a wrestler named Miyagiyama came into the hall and the crowd began to roar. For a long while, Miyagiyama and the other wrestler, whose name was Saiho, swaggered around the mound. Every time they crouched, facing one another, they made me think of two boulders on the point of tipping over. Miyagiyama always seemed to lean forward a bit more than Saiho, who was taller and much heavier. I thought when they slammed into one another, poor Miyagiyama would certainly be driven back. I couldn't imagine anyone dragging Saiho across that ring. They took up their positions 8 or 9 times without either of the men charging. Then Nobu whispered to me,
"Hatakikomi! He's going to use hatakikomi!"
Miyagiyama gave Saiho a push with all his force, and Saiho brushed right over the rope at his feet. Then, to my astonishment, the mountain of a man flew past the lip of the mound and came sprawling right into the first row of the audience.
"That," Nobu said to me, "is the move called hatakikomi."
"Isn't it fascinating?" Mameha said in something of a daze.
Later, on our way back to Gion, Mameha turned to me excitedly in the rickshaw.
"Did you see what that sumo wrestler did?" she said. "When he threw that man out of the ring, he gave me the most marvelous idea. Hatsumomo doesn't even know it, but she's just been thrown off balance herself. And she won't even find out until it's too late."
"You have a plan? Oh, Mameha-san, please tell it to me."
"Do you think for a moment I would?" she said. "Just to be very sure to keep Nobu-san interested in you. Everything depends on him and on the other man as well."
"What other man?"
"A man you haven't met yet. Now don't talk about it any further. It's a great thing you met Nobu-san today. He may just prove to be your rescuer."
I must admit I felt a sickness inside when I heard this. If I was to have a rescuer, I wanted it to be the chairman and no one else. Now that I knew the identity of the chairman, I began that very night to read every discarded news magazine I could find in the hopes of learning more about him. The article said that while the chairman was responsible for the growth and direction of Iwamura Electric, Nobu was responsible for managing it. He was the less glamorous man with the less glamorous job, but apparently he did it so well the chairman often said publicly that the company would never have survived several crises without Nobu's talents. It was Nobu who'd brought in a group of investors and saved the company from ruin in the early 1920s.
"I owe Nobu a debt I can never repay," the chairman was quoted more than once as saying.
Several weeks passed, and then one day I received a note to come to Mameha's apartment the following afternoon. When I arrived and began changing into an autumn weight silk of rust and yellow, I was taken aback to find a tear in the back of the gown large enough to put 2 fingers through. When at last Mameha rushed in, I went to ask her about it.
"I told you that according to my plan," she said, "2 men will be important to your future.
You met Nobu a few weeks ago. The other man has been out of town until now, but with the help of that torn kimono, you're about to meet him.
Ma'am, I said, may I ask, is it part of your plan that Nobu-san will one day become my danna?
I have only two things to say to you. First, you're a 14-year-old girl with no reputation whatever. You'll be very fortunate ever to become a geisha with sufficient status for a man like Nobu to consider proposing himself as your danna. Secondly, Nobu-san has never found a geisha he likes well enough to take as a mistress. If you're the first, I expect you to feel very flattered.
I blushed with so much heat in my face, I might almost have caught fire. Mameha was quite right. Whatever became of me in the years ahead, I would be fortunate ever to attract the notice of a man like Nobu. If Nobu was beyond my reach, how much more unreachable the chairman must be. I dressed in a hurry, and Mameha led me up the street to the okiya where she'd lived until 6 years earlier, when she'd gained her independence. At the door we were greeted by an elderly maid.
"We called the hospital earlier," the maid said. "The doctor goes home at 4 o'clock today. It's nearly 3:30 already, you know."
"We'll phone him before we go, Kazuko-san," Mameha replied. "I'm sure he'll wait for me."
"I hope so. It would be terrible to leave the poor girl bleeding."
"Who's bleeding?" I asked in alarm. But the maid only looked at me with a sigh and led us up the stairs. In a space about the size of 2 tatami mats were gathered not only Mameha and me, as well as the maid who'd shown us up, but also 3 other young women and a tall, thin cook in a crisp apron. The cook began to whet a knife.
"Sayuri, we're going to put a little cut in your skin," Mameha said. "Just a little one so you can go to the hospital and meet a certain doctor." In a moment, the cook finished sharpening the knife and came to stand before me. "We're going to put the cut on her leg," Mameha said. "Sayuri, please turn around and show Kazuko the hole in the back of your kimono." I opened my mouth, but before I could even speak, Mameha told me, "Just lie down and be quiet, Sayuri. If you slow us down any further, I'm going to be very angry." I'd be lying if I said I wanted to obey her, but of course, I had no choice. I've never been good at the sight of blood. I lapsed into such a state when I saw it that I have no memory at all of what happened next, of being helped into the rickshaw, or of anything at all about the ride, until we were in the hospital and Mameha rocked my head from side to side to get my attention. "We want the doctor to see you looking as innocent and helpless as possible," Mameha told me. "Lie back and try to look weak." I had no difficulty at all with this. A moment later, the door opened and in came Dr. Crab. Of course his name wasn't really Dr. Crab, but if you'd seen him, I'm sure the same name would have occurred to you, because he had his shoulders hunched up and his elbows sticking out so much. He peered at me. "I'm so sorry to trouble you, doctor," Mameha said. "But Sayuri has such a bright future before her, and now she's had the misfortune of cutting her leg."
"Just so," said Dr. Crab. "Now perhaps I might have a look at the injury. Perhaps you'd be kind enough to ask that she lie on her stomach on the examining table."
I couldn't understand why Dr. Crab didn't ask me himself. But to seem obedient, I waited until I'd heard the words from Mameha. Then the doctor raised my robe almost to my hips and brought over a cloth and some sort of smelly liquid which he rubbed on my thigh. "Sayuri has just begun her apprenticeship," Mameha said. "I was introducing her around Gion. Naturally, everyone wanted to invite her in for tea."
"Yes, I can imagine," the doctor said.
Dr. Crab said nothing more, but washed the cut as though he wanted to see how much he could make it hurt. He rolled my robe down.
"I'm sorry you've ruined such a fine kimono," he said. "But I'm certainly happy at the chance to have met you. Mameha-san knows I'm always interested in new faces."
"Oh, no.
The pleasure is all mine, Doctor, I said.
Perhaps I'll see you one evening quite soon at the Ichiriki Tea House.
To tell the truth, Doctor, Mamaha said, Sayuri is a bit of a special property, as I'm sure you can imagine. She already has more admirers than she can handle, so I've been keeping her away from the Ichiriki as much as I can. Perhaps we might visit you at the Shirai Tea House instead.
Yes, I would prefer that myself, Dr. Crab said.
Some weeks passed without word from any of the men, and Mameha and I began to worry. But at last, one morning, a secretary from Iwamura Electric phoned the Ichiriki Tea House to request my company for that evening. Mameha was delighted at this news because she hoped the invitation had come from Nobu. I was delighted too. I hoped it was from the chairman. I was invited to the Ichiriki Tea House many times over the weeks that followed, and not always with Mameha. She cautioned me not to stay too long for fear of making myself look unpopular. So after an hour or so, I always bowed and excused myself as though I were on my way to another party. One evening, Mameha asked me, "Do you know what is meant by the homeless eel?" I had no idea what she was talking about, and I said so. "Men have a kind of, well, an eel on them," she said. "Women don't have it, but men do. It's located..." "I think I know what you're talking about," I said. "It isn't an eel, really," Mameha said, "but pretending it's an eel makes things so much easier to understand. Here's the thing. The eel spends its entire life trying to find a home, and what do you think women have inside them? Caves where the eels like to live." "You may not know this about eels," Mameha went on, "but they're quite territorial. When they find a cave they like, they wriggle around inside it for a while to be sure that, well, to be sure it's a nice cave, I suppose. And when they've made up their minds that it's comfortable, they mark the cave as their territory by spitting. Do you understand?" If Mameha had simply told me what she was trying to say, I'm sure I would have been shocked, but at least I'd had an easier time sorting it all out. "Here's the part that's going to seem very strange to you," Mameha went on, as if what she'd already told me didn't. "Men actually like doing this. In fact, they like it very much. There are even men who do little in their lives besides search for different caves to let their eels live in. A woman's cave is particularly special to a man if no other eel has ever been in it before. Do you understand? We call this mizuage. The first time a woman's cave is explored by a man's eel." As I later learned, a year or two before I'd first come to Gion, Dr. Crab had paid a record amount for Mameha's mizuage, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 yen. Mameha's mizuage had been so costly partly because of her fame, but there was another reason, as she explained to me that afternoon. Two very wealthy men had bid against another to be her mizuage patron. One was Dr. Crab. The other was a businessman named Fujikado. Ordinarily, men didn't compete this way in Gion. They all knew one another and preferred to reach agreement on things. But Fujikado lived on the other side of the country and came to Gion only occasionally. He didn't care if he offended Dr. Crab, and Dr. Crab, who claimed to have some aristocratic blood in him, hated self-made men like Fujikado. When Mameha noticed at the sumo tournament that Nobu seemed taken with me, she thought at once of how much Nobu resembled Fujikado. Self-made, and to a man like Dr. Crab, repulsive. If these two men found me appealing enough, they might start a bidding war, which could put me in the same position to repay my debts as if I'd been a popular apprentice all along. This was what Mameha had meant by catching Hatsumomo off balance.
One afternoon, Mamaha came to the Okiya and took me in the reception room to tell me that the bidding for my Mizuage had begun. She'd received a message from the mistress of the Ichiriki that very morning. I couldn't be more disappointed at the timing, Mamaha said, because I have to leave for Tokyo this afternoon. But you won't need me. You'll know if the bidding goes high because things will start to happen.
I don't understand, I said. What sorts of things?
All sorts of things, she said, and then left without even taking a cup of tea. She was gone 3 days. At first my heart raced every time I heard one of the maids approaching. But 2 days passed without any news. Then on the third day, Auntie came to the hallway to tell me Mother wanted me upstairs. Mother was sitting at the table when I entered her room.
I've come to the decision to adopt you, she said. You and I will perform a ceremony next week. After that, you'll be my daughter just as if you'd been born to me. One day, the Okiya will be yours.
I couldn't think what to say, and I don't remember much of what happened next. Mother went on talking. I was listening with only half my mind until I began slowly to realize that as Mother's daughter, I would no longer have to struggle under Hatsumomo's tyranny. This had been Mameha's plan all along, and yet I'd never really believed it would happen. In the midst of all of this, the door slid open, and Hatsumomo herself stood there in the hallway.
What do you want? Mother said. I'm busy.
Hatsumomo didn't like this, but she came and sat at the table anyway.
Poor Pumpkin has just come running to me very upset, she began. She told me something very strange. She said, Oh, Hatsumomo, Mother has changed her mind, but I told her I doubted it was true. I'm sure she'd feel better, Mother, if you told her yourself.
Told her what?
That you haven't changed your mind about adopting her.
Whatever gave her that idea? I never had the least intention of adopting her in the first place.
So it's true.
Hatsumomo's face was splotched red from anger. She got up and walked to the door, but Mother stopped her.
Sayuri will be my daughter in 1 week, she said. Between now and then, you must learn how to treat her with respect.
When Mameha returned to town the following day and learned that Mother had decided to adopt me, she didn't seem as pleased as I expected. She nodded and looked satisfied, to be sure, but she didn't smile. I asked if things hadn't turned out exactly as she'd hoped.
Oh, no. The bidding between Dr. Crab and Nobu went just as I'd hoped, she told me, and the final figure was a considerable sum. The moment I found out, I knew Mrs. Nitta would certainly adopt you. I couldn't be more pleased.
Nobu bid quite aggressively for my Mizuage, but only during the first few days until the figure passed 8,000 yen. When he did drop out, it probably wasn't because the bidding had gone too high. Mamaha knew from the beginning that Nobu could bid against anyone if he wanted to. The trouble, which Mamaha hadn't anticipated, was that Nobu had no more than a vague interest in my Mizuage. Only a certain kind of man spends his time and money chasing after Mizuage, and it turned out that Nobu wasn't one of them. In the end, Dr. Crab agreed to pay 11,500 yen for my Mizuage. As far as everyone was concerned, I had set a new record, and it remained until 1951. It goes without saying that this is why Mother adopted me. The fee for my Mizuage was more than enough to repay all my debts to the Okiya. The adoption took place the following week. Already my given name had changed to Sayuri. Now my family name changed as well. Back in my tipsy house on the seashore, I'd been Sakamoto Chiyo. Now my name was Nitta Sayuri. Of all the important moments in the life of a geisha, Mizuage certainly ranks as high as any. Mine occurred in early July of 1935, when I was 15 years old. It began in the afternoon when Dr. Crab and I drank sake in a ceremony that bound us together.
The reason for this ceremony is that even though the Mizuage itself would be over with quickly, Dr. Crab would remain my Mizuage patron until the end of his life. Not that it gave him any special privileges, you understand. The ceremony was performed at the